8 o'clock Sunday morning, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, the flagship station of the reigning Western Conference champion expansion Vegas Golden Knights. We are streaming on the LV Sports Network, and we can be seen on Facebook Live right now. And you can see why I was born with a face for radio, right? That wasn't funny.
Yeah, it was.
Hey, listen, if you're listening for the first time, this is Out of Line, and we are here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9. I'm Brian Feldman. Directly in front of me, producer and Lotus Broadcasting sports radio personality all over Vegas Golden Knights Radio, Chris Magnum Chapman, is here as always. To my right on your radio dial, former UNLV quarterback, the last guy to take him to a bowl game, and he's also the current color commentator on our sister station, the sports leader, ESPN Radio here in Las Vegas, Caleb Herring, and he will be chiming in. Obviously, we'll be talking some UNLV as they get ready to open conference play next Saturday against New Mexico. We'll be talking about that a lot more as well. And hey, don't forget the Jose Vellante. He's not here today, but he's in California. Back next week, and don't forget to check out Jose's show Thursday night called Sudden Death on a station just barely up the radio dial. Good show. Definitely check that out. And again, you can follow this show on Twitter at Out of Line, 1340 AM. And on Facebook, it's even easier. It's Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. A ton of subjects available to choose from. If you got one, call in, man. The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby's University on South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo, a great place to watch every game. Today, again, as I just mentioned, Caleb Herring back in studio for the third straight week, which, of course, again means we'll be breaking down UNLV as they get ready to start the play next Saturday. You'll also hear from Billy Bean, the Oakland A's Executive Vice President of Baseball Operations and the inspiration behind the movie Moneyball. The Vegas Golden Knights are getting ready for their final preseason game, which takes place tonight at T-Mobile Arena at 7 o'clock against the San Jose Sharks. We'll hear from Ryan Reeves about the excitement of the preseason and his thoughts on this year's team as they start the regular season this Thursday night at home versus the Philadelphia Flyers. And Alan Snell will join for LV Sports Biz Minute to talk about his book. And it's week four in the National Football League, and today is the final day of the MLB regular season. So What's on Tap was brought to you by Bubby's University, where you can earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. The only major is a good time. Bring your Rebel ID and your first beer is free. You can roll 24 hours a day. Yes, that means they never close. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. Go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot.
It is Blazing, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. A Hail Mary pass from Centennial Hills Hospital. They've got two happy hours a day. It is America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. And hey, we are there every Monday night celebrating Monday Night Football, having a party, giving away memorabilia, paraphernalia, and, hey, free wings, man, and wing parties. You can't beat it. Again, come check us out tomorrow night. Good game, too, man. Kansas City at Denver. That should be a good one. Patrick Mahomes, I think his first real defensive test with Von Miller in his grill. We'll see what happens with that one there tomorrow night. So definitely come check us out at Buffalo Wild Wings on Monday night. But let me tell you this. What's Blazing? Man, the Oakland A's not only made the playoffs last week, winning one of the American League wild card slots, they'll be playing the New York Yankees in New York on Wednesday night, but they also made the official announcement this past Thursday at the site of the new stadium, and I got a chance to meet and interview one of the most famous front office men in the history of Major League Baseball, currently the Executive Vice President of Baseball Operations, Billy Bean. Talking with Billy Bean, Vice President of Operations for the Oakland Athletics. You guys are finally here. You joked about it up there, 24 years in the making, but what does it feel like?
It's good, and it seems like something that should have happened a long time ago. It's not just the location. I mean, obviously, Oakland and Las Vegas are very close to each other. There's A's fans here. It's just serendipitous that the Oakland Raiders are moving down here, so there seems to be you know, that connection will be, you know, a lot of fans from Oakland, I'm sure, coming down to see the Raiders play. And hopefully the new, well, we don't have a name of the a new team yet, but when they name it, they'll be coming down to see our AAA players. But it fits. And one thing was always missing, this has been a dynamic, growing town over the last 25 years. It's changed so much. I mean, even the location, this area here, you know, you would have never, I mean, they're just, you never thought anything off the strip, but now you've got, I've been out here, you got Henderson, you got just so many areas around here that are growing. And the only thing they were missing here was a new baseball stadium. And now they have it. So it's probably going to be one of the crown jewels of minor league baseball once that stadium's completed and we start playing our team here.
I know it's, again, redundant, but looking at this stadium, how quick it's going up, and knowing what Vegas can do construction and architecturally wise, is it pretty amazing, though, to see it this quickly and you're already going to be playing here next season?
Yeah, and the good thing here, you don't have weather's probably is not going to be an issue going, you know, leading into next spring. I know when we were in we opened the ballpark in Nashville, and it was a similar thing, and you were kind of wondering how they're going to get it done. And they had, you know, they had weather issues there during, you know, they'll have a winter, not a terrible winter, but the fact that, you know, you get pretty decent weather. I know it gets a little chilly here, but should help, and hopefully it'll be on time, and it looks like it will be.
You know, I know you talked about relationships, part of the reason you came, obviously the new stadium, but what about proximity from Nashville to Vegas? This has to be great for you guys.
Yes. I mean, and the other, it's not, but understand about 50% of the moves we make are going to be on the road. And the best thing is you, Las Vegas, you can get a direct flight to Croatia if you wanted to. So there's a direct flight to every city that we're playing in from Las Vegas, and that's the biggest thing. Because, you know, there'll be times we'll be playing in Chicago, we'll be playing in New York, we'll be playing, and we'll need to get somebody there with one plane flight, and you can do that from Las Vegas.
How important is it to win at the minor league level? I mean, you know, everything. I've talked to so many minor league managers down here with the 51s as the years have gone by, you know, Wally Backman, and they all said the same thing. You're a little bit hamstrung as a AAA manager because as soon as somebody starts playing well, they get called up to the big club. But he said winning still is really important at this level. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, and not only do we feel that way, we demand it, and we have a track record of backing up those words. I said it up there in the press conference, 19 of the last 24 seasons, we've been over 500. We've had 6 PCL championships, 2 national AAA championships. So we think winning's important. We demand winning's important, and we back it up by, you know, by doing it. And it is part of, finishing off a player. I mean, losing is a habit, and we want our players to get in the habit of winning. And there is a correlation between teams that win in the minor leagues and the major leagues. So.
The first year you start here, you come already, it's next year. It's here, you make this big change. The players, how's it been received by the team, by the community? I mean, does the community get involved much with AAA in Oakland?
Yeah, the hardcore fans, definitely. You'll see a lot of hardcore Oakland, and there are a lot of hardcore Oakland A's fans that will be making trips down here to watch the AAA team. Listen, that's the great thing. If you watch your AAA team, and there's plenty of other things to do. It's a good excuse to come to, another good excuse to come to Las Vegas, right? As if you need one. So, but yeah, I have no doubt that, you know, we've got a young group of fans too that I think will embrace the fact that we're here and be part of the, you know, coming down here and watching the guys play.
I'm not going to talk about the 2-year deal. I heard you talking about that before. That's immaterial, really. What do they call it? Formality. So what about the big league club? You got to be pretty proud. Again, Billy, this team, I think they started the season with the lowest budget, again, or the lowest salaries per, for the whole team, and you guys are in the playoffs again. How do you do this year in and year out? I know it's not every year, but you guys are pretty much competitive every 2-3 years with a lower salary cap, or not a salary cap, but a lower salary than everyone else.
Yeah, we're pretty proud of that. I think a lot of it goes to the, we have experience. I mean, we, you know, there's a lot of stability here. We've done it before, and I think that helps. I'm coming up on my 30th year in the organization. I'm not nearly the senior guy here. I've got a great group around me. I've got a great field staff. And again, I don't think we panic. We realize, listen, in Oakland, you're going to have cycles that come a little quicker than in the bigger markets. And having gone through it a few times, I think it makes you a little better doing it the next time.
This year, hell of a, some great teams going into the postseason. The Boston Red Sox, I mean, I don't know how anybody beats them in 7 games. What do you feel your guys' chances are going in?
Well, the good thing about the Red Sox is we won't have to beat them in 7. If we get to play them, it'll have to be 5. So, but they are a very good team. The American League is just whoever gets the World Series in the American League is, it's going to have to go through some really good teams. Houston's a great team. Boston, the Yankees, Cleveland. Listen, we're the second wild card team, and we have a better record than anybody in the National League. So it's going to be a rough road to get there through the American League. But listen, it's a tournament now, and the best team doesn't always win. It's the one who's playing the best at the time and maybe gets a few breaks.
Very true. Last question for you. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about Moneyball. How much has that changed your life? And I had a good friend that I met you in Oakland at some event that you were speaking at and said you had some great stories about Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. So I just got to ask you about it, man.
Yeah, it was a great experience. I mean, both of them were wonderful people. I mean, Brad Pitt couldn't be smart, intelligent, funny, down to earth, just a really good person. And it was a great process. Really enjoyed it. I'm kind of glad it's over because it was a little overwhelming at the time. But listen, looking back on it, I wish I would have enjoyed it. But all in all, the best thing about it was a really well-done movie. It was nominated for 6 Academy Awards. And the worst thing, it's one thing to have a movie made, but what you'd hate to have happen is have a movie made, have it be just absolutely terrible. So the fact that it was very good and people recognized that was pretty cool.
Come on, the best thing is Brad Pitt played Billy Bean. How do you beat that?
Yeah, no, I kind of exhaled when I found that out because I was kind of holding my breath trying to figure out who the heck was going to play me. So, yeah, good for sure.
Thank you so much, Billy. Yeah, appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Fact this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Fact. Stats do matter, and so does play calling consistently at crunch time. In any level of football, if you're talking about being an elite program, this postseason, or I should say postgame press conference by James Franklin makes me kind of question his ability to be the head coach at Penn State if they, in fact, are looking to be elite. Here's James Franklin, man, after the game and the loss to Ohio State, and it was ugly.
We are going to find a way to get from being a great program, which we are, just so everybody's crystal clear, we're a great program. We lost to an elite program, and we're that close. We have gotten comfortable being great. We will no longer be comfortable being great. We're going to learn from this. We're going to grow from this, and we're going to find a way to take that next step as a program because we've been knocking at the door long enough. And it's my job as the head coach. I'm ultimately responsible for all of it. I give you my word. We are going to find a way to take the next step. I can read off all these stats, but the stats don't matter. The stats don't matter. We're done being great.
Listen to him tap the paper. The stats don't matter, and he's tapping the paper. Caleb, do the stats matter?
To an extent, yes, but not.
I mean, you say you don't look at them, but
The thing about it is the stats don't matter, but when the stats don't matter, your players, the great moments by your players matter. And so I think he, in a way, kind of contradicted his own thoughts on the field because when the stats don't matter, you want to give it to your best player, and they make special plays. And that's what the difference between elite teams, I think, that he's trying to talk about. They give the ball to their best player and let them go be special. And I don't think they did that in the game. Their best player was their quarterback, and he didn't have the ball on the most important play of the game, that fourth down attempt. They could get that 1 yard. He's been unstoppable all day. The stats don't matter, right? I don't know the percentage-wise. Fourth and one, you should be able to get it on a run play.
Fourth and five.
Fourth and five?
Yeah, because it was third and 14, and McSorley picked up 9. And
that
they
makes
fourth
it even worse.
So play action, would that not be play action quarterback option to run?
I wouldn't even play action. I'd go empty, drop back with an option to pass, and if nobody's there, then
so kind of can kind run. Of
the
a
same thing they did the rest of the game, the same thing they did on the third down to try to get back into the fourth and manageable. It was a drop back pass. McSorley didn't see anything.
So kind of a delayed draw,
right?
But
with,
you have
with
an
a real option,
to,
to pass, right? So I mean, that's to me that was the difference of the game, right there. Like you dominated the game for the most part. Penn State was in control until the second half, where they did pretty much nothing to stop Ohio State. Where Ohio State was like, "Let's get the ball to our playmakers, bubble screen for a touchdown." Like there was throw a screen to your running back for a touchdown to get your pass game going. Like things like that. It wasn't anything special schematically. They just said, "Let's get the ball to our guys." What you did with the last play was take the ball away from your guy with a simple handoff, and it was like
coaching.
Didn't fool anybody. That was so. I mean, in my opinion, that when you say the stats don't matter, you have to then be able to say, well, what does matter? Well, then your special player, your Heisman candidate player, matters. Give him the ball. Watch him go to work.
Do you think again, it matters. And do you think at the end of the game, especially in the fourth quarter, you saw James Franklin outcoached by Urban Meyer? I mean, they were up 12 points with 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and the game was at home for Penn State in Happy Valley. How the hell? I mean, I saw you do something more magical against CMU. That's a lot more points. But still, 12 points with 8 minutes to go at home. You win that game, right, Caleb?
Yeah, you should win that. You're supposed to win that game. But like I said, you ran into, and he said it himself, an elite team makes the difference, and they let their players make the difference. Urban Meyer didn't call anything special. They scored the game-winning touchdown on a bubble screen.
Well, defensively, he must have done a job.
I mean, the players were just making plays. They designated a quarterback spy, which really still wasn't stopping McSorley on the offensive side. I mean, they tried to with a quarterback spy, so that was a change, but all in all, it just came down to the players on the field executing. There were the game-winning touchdown, like I said, that bubble screen that Ohio State threw was one of the most simple play calls you could have called. They called it at the right time, I grant it, but there was three defenders to two blockers. A guy missed a tackle.
You're right.
And it's like, that, plain and simple, you missed a simple tackle in open field that led to a touchdown. And guys were glued to blockers on the edge. So it's like, you schematically, Urban didn't really do anything. It was a bubble screen. Like, it's like you throw a bubble screen. And I think if you look at that play, I think Haskin actually made the decision to throw. I think there was a run-pass option there where he could have handed it off, but he decided to throw the bubble. He saw it opened up, and the blockers got it done on the edges. And he like I said, the tackle was missed, and it was the game-winning touchdown. If they make that tackle,
might be a different story. But,
right.
But is James Franklin saying, I'm going to fire my offensive coordinator if he continues to make bad play calls?
No.
He's saying we've got to be an elite team. He didn't sound like he was taking any blame, and he wanted to throw out and make us all forget about that last play call up the gut. There were eight men in the box. You said it. It should have been an empty backfield with a quarterback draw called and a serious option to throw the football. The perfect play for McSorley, who has a legitimate shot to win a Heisman Trophy this year. And again, why do you take the ball out of his hands at the most important time in the game?
You shouldn't. You shouldn't. And more inexcusable is that the timeout, the chess match before that, they called, like Urban called timeout. Now we'll call a timeout. Then the play itself, they look to the sideline to check
you
off.
You see eight men in the
box.
So
it's like, why did you check to that play? You tried to trick them? I don't understand it. But my whole take on this is I think this was a drastic overreaction by Franklin to begin with. I think you lost to the number four team by one. Granted, it was at home. Granted, you want to be better. You might think that this knocks you out of contention for the college football playoffs and all that stuff. All of that, I get. But this is an overreaction. If you're losing by 1 point and it feels like an upset to Ohio State, you are in the category of elite teams.
Well, he said great. He called himself a great team. I would agree.
And I think there's some imaginary step that he wants to get, like maybe because he hasn't been to the college football playoffs yet. But I think Penn State has been great. You can count them as one of the elite college football teams at this point because they've been doing it for the past 4 or 5 years. They've been in the conversation for the college football playoffs. Only four teams can make it. So based on what he's saying in this, which is why I think it's overreaction, based on what he's saying that the only elite teams in college football are the four that get into the college football playoffs. Somebody's not going to get in. You can still be elite and not make it just because of the way this shakes up. Just because you run into one of the other elites along the way and one of you has to lose. Is Ohio State no longer an elite team if they lose to Penn State? I don't think so. I think college football is still an elite. Is Alabama not elite because they lose to Auburn? No. They're not. They're still an elite team. They just think
they lost to a team that was a little bit better, or the breaks were beating the boys.
Exactly. So I think it's a little bit of an overreaction. I understand his frustration. I think his frustration comes from the fact that they were in control of the game for four quarters and really gave it up at the end. So I think that's why he's frustrated. But to say that the program's not elite is, I think, a bit of an overreaction. I understand what his frustrations are, but I think still he has an elite football team.
Well,
I think
the history
still has
of Penn State
right,
alone.
He still has a chance to be in the college football playoffs. It's one loss to the number 14. That's a good loss to have. You know what I'm saying? It's not like they lost to Idaho State or something like that. It's a good loss to have on your record. So I think a bit of an overreaction. I think, yes, you could have won the game had you let McSorley – make the play. And you could see it on McSorley's face. No, like, doubt. The camera zooms in on him. He's like, why did I just hand the ball off? Why wasn't I a part of this last effort?
I should have just audibled out of it and not paid any damn attention.
I'll call a timeout, yeah, frankly, coach. I'll do this.
Seriously. I mean, two other notables you talked about with Penn State being an elite team. It is their third loss in 15 seasons when leading by at least 12 points in the fourth quarter. So it's not something they're completely unfamiliar with doing. But one thing in that game, I don't know if you saw it, Caleb. I was going to record it just in case you didn't. The catch by Juwan Johnson in the first quarter of that game was Odell Beckham-esque. I mean, it was unbelievable. He was as high up as he could get. It was a one-handed, sure catch on the sideline.
Right.
To this point, in my opinion, the catch of the year in college football until something beats it.
There was one.
Did you see it?
I can't remember.
Did you see the one I'm talking about, or you didn't, did you?
I didn't. I don't think I saw the one you're talking about, but I can't remember. This was an NFL catch, so never mind. But cancel that. I'd have to see. I don't know.
Devontae Davis made a couple of great one-handed catches in the end zone that I remember again. Oh, my God.
That was a great one-handed catch. It wasn't for a touch. I think it did end up being a touchdown for Jacksonville. I can't remember who caught it in the NFL. It's escaping me, but it was the greatest catch I've ever seen. And it was better than Odell. It was over the top of the defender's head with one hand.
I think I remember.
That was this
well.
Year. So, but, I mean, if you're talking college football, we'll have to rank
it. You got
to
look. If you get a chance, check it out. Juwan Johnson, without question. If this guy, if that is a normal thing for him to do, he will be playing on Sundays. I mean, that was circus in every respect of the word. Real quickly, I wanted to talk about, you know, we did the Blaze, and I just a couple guys honorable mention in the Heisman watch. We talked about Trace McSorley. I do think Tua is probably leading for Alabama right now, the race, but Trace McSorley, 286 yards passing, two TDs, 175 on the ground. He is really a multi-dimensional quarterback, and I think has a legit shot at the next level. We'll see with Trace McSorley. He seems to see the field well. Very good general and a lot of experience at the collegiate level, which does bode well and help when you move into Sundays. Will Greer of West Virginia, three TDs yesterday, 370 passing yards. And Kyler Murray, man, I mean, at Oklahoma, this guy is just an athlete. He could be playing Major League Baseball right now as we speak today, and instead he's going to be playing National Football League football in a couple of years.
Is he?
You think he's going to play baseball?
I think I go baseball.
When you're in the first round, one of the first picks?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, Jameis Winston had the same type of thing and backed off of it and went to play football. I don't know. The way Kyler Murray plays this game, I mean, 432 passing yards, six TDs in the air, and one on the ground for this kid yesterday. Granted, as you said, they played the bad Baylor Bears, and they are bad. But that is still very gaudy numbers. And stats matter, James Franklin, Caleb Herring. They matter. You might tell the people and lie to the public and say, we don't pay attention to stats. Caleb, honestly, did you pay attention to your stats? Come on, man.
I did.
Okay.
But I also paid attention to how they translated.
Well, you have to have a short memory. I understand that.
I mean, like, your stats matter to a point. Like, so, for instance, you throw for 500 yards in a game but zero touchdowns. That matters because, you had a great game yardage-wise, but you don't – I mean, so you have to translate them to winning. I mean – if the stats don't translate to winning, then it doesn't mean anything. But if you throw for 500 yards, but it's because you had 70 pass attempts in a game, then it doesn't really matter. If you threw, for instance, for 500 yards, but the ball never traveled more than 5 yards down the line of scrimmage, and it was all your receivers with yards after catch, that, I mean, you have to really look deeper into the stats. And I guess in a way that is the stats speaking.
That's
to
what
you,
I'm saying. I mean,
yeah,
I
it
get
do
it.
Matter to,
it
an extent.
To me, in blowout losses or wins, you look at the stats and you say, wow, great job. Or you look at the stats and say, oh, we're not even going to look at these. I get that.
Yeah.
But under normal circumstances, stats are a measuring stick
for
you personally and for your team.
That's how that's production. Stats are a measure of production.
A measuring stick.
You have to be able to say there is some validity to the stats.
100%. But, yeah. And to me, when a coach says we don't pay attention to stats, it's a cop-out. It's a politically correct thing to say, but everyone does. And then Tua, again, man, Alabama's quarterback, he went 8-for-8, 128 yards passing and only two TDs, but he sat out the entire second half pretty much, and they let Hurts go. I'm amazed.
They let Hurts go, and they make sure he wants to stay
he has to now.
A part of the Crimson Tide.
He has to.
Now.
Five games he's played
in.
Caleb, explain that to me. Seriously, I don't get it.
I really I think the guy has a great chance to make it to the next level from because he's at Alabama and because he's at one of the premier programs ever. So I think I understand why he'd want to stay. I'm not knocking his decision to be around. I don't like the kind of dangling him around just to keep him around. I think that's what Nick Saban's kind of So I think what Nick Saban's trying to do is to keep him as an asset to his team, to keep depth on his team. He managed to kind of trick the new system where he would have, where Hurts would have been allowed to transfer, like Kelly Bryant did.
Well, Hurts figures with all the blowouts, he's going to play in almost every game anyway.
He's going to get, he has film on. Coming out of Alabama, he's going to have the best physical trainers, the best pro day. He's going to have the most exposure coming from Alabama. So you get why he wants to stay. As far as playing and being the main contributor to a winning program or to a winning season, he's done that already. He took him to the national championship.
And is there any truth to the fact, Caleb, that maybe he's worried if he goes to another program, starting quarterback there, he could play his way out of the NFL?
There is that legitimate worry, but for him, he's not worried about that. That's not his concern. I think he believes in himself. He's made
He's the mop-up boy at Alabama.
I'd
be happy to be the mop-up boy.
He's playing with the best athletes. So when he does get in, he looks best. He looks even better because he's playing with the best receivers that are with the best offensive line, all that stuff. So he does look better, but I don't think that's his main reason for staying. He might just like his situation better. He might just like being in Alabama better. Who knows?
He sure didn't sound like it earlier in the season.
He was frustrated because he wasn't going to play. But like I said, the after football life, the fact that his pro day at Alabama is going to be the most watched pro day of any, program everywhere or across the country. No matter where he goes, he's not going to get the exposure, even if he's playing. But then you look at a guy like Kelly Bryant, who made the decision for himself, like, I'm not going to start. I'm leaving. Like, I got to go.
And look what happens at Clemson.
You hear so much stuff, like, on the halftime show. I was watching some of the SEC commentators were saying, oh, shame on him for leaving. He done that. The program now suffers, and I'm just, are you kidding me? It's like the program suffers. You want the kid to feel sorry for the program because he's gonna ride the rest of his college career off on the bench. Maybe not get a chance at the next level. Who knows? But he's gonna ride the at no fault of his own. He played well.
I don't blame him.
So it's like, how could you be upset? I understand the program has suffered, and because of what happened with the injury.
How much is Clemson paying him? By the way, how much were they paying him? Nothing, right? Supposedly nothing.
He's not a paid employee.
Okay, so why the hell does he have to stay? Where's the loyalty?
And that's what I said. There's no loyalty among college programs. Like, for instance, this freshman comes in. There was no loyalty to keep him as a starter. They didn't say, oh, you were here first. We appreciate your commitment to us. We'll give you the chance to play until you prove that you can't play. He played through injuries last season and got them to the college football playoffs last year. Playing through with
college football's a business. So you guys just don't make any money,
and that's my point. So I have no sympathy for a program when it comes for the program when it comes to a kid making a decision that benefits him. I applaud Hurts in Alabama for making his decision and him making it for him, whatever his thinking was.
I thought it was stupid,
and
but
he has the right to make it, and that's the
he's right to be stupid.
And
we all do.
I also applaud Kelly Bryant for making the most of his decision, making his decision, thinking it through, and doing what he felt was best for him. I think that it's a good thing for the player to have a little bit more control, especially in college sports where they're basically at the mercy of whatever program they signed to as a 17-year-old kid. So it's like, give them a little bit of leeway here. Can they have a little bit?
Oh, I agree with you 100%, and I think, how cool is it? And it really shows you the depth of D1, the Power 5 conference schools. The third-string quarterback comes in and brings them back to beat Syracuse.
So it's crazy. Wow. So, and this is why I like the rule, because now there's people that go to Alabama, like the third-string quarterback at Alabama or the third-string quarterback at USC could start, say, in the Mountain West. And be a legitimate.
They beat out Armani Rogers in a second, right?
So I didn't say that, but
yes, you did.
So the thing is, what you do, you create parity because now Alabama can't hoard the top three quarterbacks in any given recruiting rotation. They can't. There's not going to be the best three quarterbacks. So for instance, I know Jalen Hurts stayed, but Jalen Hurts leaves. He goes to a school that's obviously not Alabama. Somebody that's not as good as Alabama elevates that program. Right, so now that program is in the contention for winning any given Saturday. So Kelly Bryant goes somewhere else, not Clemson, not the top four teams in the country, maybe not maybe not so far down to, you know, like a San Jose State type of school, but he goes somewhere else to create some more parity, some more even competition. If more players do that, more players feel empowered to do that, then coaches may not take as many chances on creating depth with five. Like a, you won't see as many people on the second string list that are five-star recruits. Like Alabama has people that in the two deep that are five-star recruits coming out of high school. You might not see that as much because you don't gamble a scholarship with a guy that potentially might just transfer out and leave. So I think it creates more parity. So it, a lot of people don't like it because the programs suffer and because the overall scheme of the power structure that is college football right now will suffer a little bit, but the players have more power. The players have more control to control their destiny and where they play and if they play. So nobody's satisfied riding the bench at Alabama, even though they're a highly touted recruit.
Very good points. He is Caleb Herring, a former quarterback at University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and also current color commentator on ESPN locally here, sports radio for the UNLV Rebel football team. You'll hear Caleb Saturday afternoon again, broadcasting on, again, our sister station as they take on New Mexico, 1 o'clock. Their only day game, which is really weird this year. Listen, we got more to talk about after the break. I got a chance Friday night to talk to Ryan Reeves, the bruiser, the enforcer of the Vegas Golden Knights, who has become a goal scorer all of a sudden, a juggernaut, and Magnum talked to him, and I wish Magnum had a great question for him, and I was very jealous, because, you know, it was funny, it was humorous, but it's really a well-put question where he said, you know, are you vying for, you know, trying to make the first line here, because, of course, he scored the basically the game-winning goal against the LA Kings Friday, and it's funny, I mean, it was a joke, but really, it's really nice to see. This guy has worked so hard, he's such a good fit for this team, and I honestly believe that there are probably only five guys in the National Hockey League that when Ryan Reeves bumps you and drops your gloves, that would drop the gloves against him. Most guys are going to try to convince him to leave his gloves on because he is that tough of a guy. Mags, is he not great or what?
Yeah, he's always a good interview. He's always good for sound bites, win or lose. He definitely does not like the LA Kings, even in preseason. And, yeah, I mean, I think he's a very likable guy. He's got a very electric personality. You know, one of those guys that's got a lot of charisma. And a lot of energy when he's talking to you. He's a cool guy, and you know I've talked to him about his tattoos because he's got some really cool tattoos. He's a big fan of Jack Skellington from Nightmare Before Christmas. So he's got he's got a huge Jack Skellington tattoo on one of his arms. So. Yeah, he's always a good interview.
He's a great interview, good guy. And after the game, I caught up with him in the locker room and talked to him about that game, about the goaltender having Marc-Andre Fleury behind you. That question never gets old to any of these guys. And about the new guys that joined the team and what they're going to do in the 2018 season.
It's never going to leave. It's an in-division team. And, you know, you play them in the playoffs, and playoff games get heated, and these games are getting heated, and you can already see it in the preseason. So, obviously, I think an early rival for this franchise, and I don't expect it to stop.
Ryan, talk about the preseason. I mean, this is an amazing game. I've never seen anything like this in a preseason game in my life. Have you?
The fans? No, never. Well, I was saying before, it's easy to get up for games in Vegas. You know, whether it's preseason or regular season, that didn't feel like a preseason game. That felt like a you know, mid-season, playoff, whatever you want to call it. That was just, you know, Knights fans doing what they do.
Do you expect it to get that physical in the preseason? I mean, it looked to us like a regular season game out there.
Yeah, I think, especially it's a division rival, and you only got two games left before for the regular season starts. So you gotta get into regular season form, and you gotta make sure you're doing all the little things right. You can't not play physical because it's the preseason. You gotta make sure that you're ready for the regular season.
What's it like to see Marc-Andre Fleury back in regular season form in the first game?
What a stud he is, hey? It's crazy. He's just right back from the playoffs. He's just playing, doing what Fleury does.
Talk about you and your goal again. I mean, you started last year the playoffs, you're scoring goals, and you're right back into doing it again this year.
I'm trying, yeah. I'm trying to help the boys out a little bit, and you can't just lean on two lines all the time. You gotta have four lines contributing, and I think that was a good start for our line. I think, you know, we got opportunities, and we gotta carry that into the regular season.
How do you feel the new guys are fitting in?
Good. I mean, they're they're going to be seamless players to fit in here. They're, you know, mature, hardworking players, and you know, that's what this team is about. You know, hard work first, and that's what they do. That's what they bring to the table.
Last thing is this team. I mean, can you do what you did last year? Everyone's asking that already. You know, it hasn't even started yet. But what's the possibility of that?
I mean, I hope not. I hope we can get three more wins. I don't want to do what I did last year because it was a tough summer. So, no, I think we're gonna push for those last three wins.
Ryan Reeves, the Vegas Golden Knights, and again, I love the guy. I think that he adds character, flavor, a huge team favorite. And it's funny, Chris, because last year when Ryan Reeves first came aboard and they traded for him and got him, I remember the fans booing when he would go on the ice. Like, he was going to upset the chemistry of this team. And if you remember, I was like, people just don't know hockey, man. This guy is something they need for the playoffs to give them that physical enforcer presence that can protect the other guys. England is a fighter. He's a tough guy, but he's not Ryan Reeves. Or Carrier.
There were some people upset with Reeves, and there's still some people who are not on board with Reeves being on the team. But I really like Ryan Reeves. I like the fact that the reality is Derek England has taken on a leadership role. He's no longer that guy who's going to go out there and drop the gloves. Maybe in the preseason he'll do it, but he didn't have any fights in the regular season last year. So Ryan Reeves is a little bit of a different presence. Him and Will Carrier, they play a very similar game.
How about on the same line? How cool is that going to be this year?
Well, yeah, there'll be some teams that will not want to be out on the ice with Carrier and Reeves at the same time, because those two guys, I mean, Reeves has never won to shy away from contact, and neither has Carrier. Carrier's got a lot more speed than Reeves, but Reeves is a big body. I mean, he's got to be 6'3", probably 215, 230 pounds.
Yeah, 225, 230.
You know, and he's a guy who uses his size. He gets in front of the net. You know, for a big guy, he skates deceptively well, too. I mean, obviously, you have to at this level, but, you know, I think the misconception is people called Ryan Reeves a goon, and that's just not the case. Ryan Reeves is not a goon. Ryan Reeves plays physical, but he doesn't play dirty. He plays the right way. I don't know why people would have a problem with it.
I see, Bags, in all seriousness, I still call him a goon. And it's not a negative connotation that I associate goon with. I used to call Bob Probert, who I knew was a friend of mine and I played hockey with, a goon. Bob Probert was a guy that would spend a great amount of time in the penalty box and score 20-plus goals a season. And he did that over a 5 or 6 year stretch, and yet he would lead the league in penalty minutes and still score 20 goals. That is an unbelievable hockey, but he was a goon.
He's not a goon in the sense of Ty Domi, in the sense of
I know what you're saying.
I think when you say goon, a lot of people just have this image of a guy that's like, basically, he might as well not even be skating around with a stick, because he's just there to be the
enforcer. Well, he should be, but the stick is a weapon.
He's not Marty McSorley, you know?
And it's good to have the goon that, well, I guess, I get what he's saying. He's a goon in the aspect of he's an actual legitimate threat to do something other than goon things.
Yeah,
he's,
I mean, he may score, you know,
right,
7-8 goals this year, and if he does, that's
the big season for
him. A huge season for him, yep, because he's a fourth line guy. He's probably not going to get a lot of time on the ice anyway, but
he's a disruptor. That's what his job is to disrupt.
And the thing is,
he does it as good as anybody in the league.
He's on the ice because he will protect Marchessault. He will protect Riley Smith. He will protect anyone on that team. William Carlson,
absolutely.
But the other thing is, he also has the ability to change the momentum of the game. If he, you know, fights somebody or he has a huge hit, that could get the team going. We saw it one time last year with Calgary where he just destroyed TJ Brody of Calgary. And then within 15, 20 minutes, William Carlson scores a natural hat trick. So it's a kind of thing where I like what he brings to the team. I like that he brings a little bit of physicality, a lot of force. And quite honestly, maybe outside of two or three guys in the league, there's nobody that wants to mix it up with him.
Well, I said, when he drops your gloves, you're like, oh, man, I didn't want that to happen. You know, Ryan, can I get you a cup of coffee or something?
Yeah, I mean, well, we saw that the other night. Yeah. The guy from the Kings, you know, he decided
he was messing with England, and Reeves decided to get involved.
Yeah.
Well, he's messing with Derek England, who's not a pushover, and Reeves gets involved, and the guy all of a sudden didn't want any part of it anymore.
Skate away. Yep. Just skate away.
Yep. Reeves was laughing at him.
Yeah. Yeah, he always laughs at the other guy. Like, dude, do you really want a piece of this?
Yeah.
You can see he's got that attitude. Like, do you want to? You know what I'd like to see? Like him and PK Subban go at it. I think that would be a hell of a fight.
See, I think Reeves and Byfuglien from Winnipeg.
Oh, man.
Would be good.
You're
but,
right.
But like Reeves is just he I think if you talk to him and you spend any time around him, he's one of those guys that's very charismatic and you're just drawn to talking to him because he just has that type of personality. Like some guys have it.
It's infectious. Yeah, I agree 100%.
And you could tell a lot of the guys in the locker room really like him. They like his presence. They joke with him. And the people associated with the Golden Knights, they enjoy being around him. He's just one of those guys that, you know, when he puts on the skates and he straps up the helmet and he puts the gloves on and he goes out there on the ice, he's got a job to do. But when he's off the ice, I would imagine he's probably a pretty mellow, nice guy.
I think so.
I mean, he's always been nice to me. So, I mean, and nobody in the – I don't know anyone in the media that's had a problem with him.
No. Chris, I've always – just like you, I enjoy Ryan Reeves. I think he's always accommodating. You know, he'll sit there and answer every question. He's one of the guys that is more enjoyable. And like you said, an infectious type of personality where I enjoy every time I interview. Kind of – I used to enjoy talking to Caleb, too, when he was on UNLV, you know, back in the day.
Not so much anymore, though, huh?
I love Caleb Herring.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey, listen, I want to – you know, again, Caleb Herring in studio, Chris Magnum Chapman behind the big board. Want to thank – again, both Billy Bean and Ryan Reeves for helping us out today as well. We'll try to get Alan. Like I said, my bad with Alan Snell. Didn't give him a heads up on what time, but I want to talk to him about this book. He wrote a great book about a serious bicycle accident that he was in Florida, and how he came back to Vegas. He was a former writer for the Review Journal, came back here, started this website, lvsportsbiz.com. In a little over a year and a half, he's over 100,000 subscribers to his website right now, and he wrote a book on it. I'm really looking forward to that. We'll talk more about Alan in the future. I do want to get really quickly, but you know, I want to get into UNLV this week, Caleb.
Yeah.
You know, it was a tough loss a week ago to Arkansas State. Is a bye a good thing right now?
Yeah. I think they had some injuries, some nicks and nacks on the offensive line, especially to some time to recover before getting into conference play is always good. So I think it was good for them to get a bye week and kind of get their wits about them. It was a grueling – I mean, you think about it, 4 weeks of camp, then straight into 4 weeks of the season. Your toughest part of the schedule, I think, was the non-conference play. So yeah, it's good to come up for air kind of after 8 weeks straight of just grinding and playing football, get a little break. I know coaches don't get a break on bye weeks in college. They're out recruiting and doing whatever they can.
That was Sanchez's excuse for not being on the show today. He's on a recruiting trip.
Well, yeah, so I mean it's legitimate.
He's studying the back of his eyelids, isn't he, right
no,
now?
No, I would hope so, because you need to take some opportunities for sleep as a coach, because they don't sleep. I learned that. They don't sleep. College coaches don't sleep. There's no room for
that. I don't
think
pro coaches sleep very much
not
either.
Not as much, but I think college is more of a year-round kind of thing than NFL, because the NFL, you kind of know your guys. You don't have to constantly recruit. There's management that does that for you. College coach, you are the GM. It's all you. So I think it's good to have some time to step back, but for the players more so too, to have a break from 8 weeks straight of football.
Okay, listen, I'm at Mag's appointment. We've got to take our last break. We'll take that real quick. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about UNLV and the NFL and hopefully squeeze in a little Major League Baseball as well. I'm trying to get my headset on here. Okay, there we go. All right, I'm back. Out of live, Fox Sports Radio, Sunday mornings, 8 to 9. I'm Brian Feldman. In studio, to my right on your radio dial, Caleb Herring, former UNLV quarterback and color commentator on ESPN, UNLV's football color commentator, and of course, Chris Magnum Chapman behind the big board, the wheels of steel, making everything happen, making it all go round. And Jose Vellante in studio next week. He'll be back with us as well, so we'll be talking to Jose. And real quickly, Caleb, wrapping up on UNLV football, what can be done or simplified for Armani Rodgers to be more successful in the passing game?
I think what you saw last night with Ohio State, when they were struggling, when Haskin was struggling in the passing game, which is not characteristic of him. When he was struggling, they simplified the passing game. Throw some bubble screens, throw some quick passes just to get him confident. I think you can do the same thing with Armani. Get the ball to your athletes in space, like guys like Tylee Collins, Lexington Thomas. Get them the ball in space. Like, get the ball to them quick so they can make some yards after catch and kind of spark the passing game. Get Armani's confidence up. Let him see receivers catching passes. Get him in some sort of rhythm on some short passes, and And that's how you can manufacture a passing game, because the running game is going to come along. We know that they're going to control the game in the trenches for the most part. So it's not about doing anything drastic. You got the athletes. You got some skill on the edges. Just let them make plays. Get the ball to them quick. Let them make plays.
Sounds like you're saying KISS. Keep it simple, stupid.
That's right? Exactly what I'm saying. I'm glad you know that, because I used to always say that. Yeah, KISS.
Keep it simple, stupid,
that's
man.
All.
And I think that's a great thing for him. I don't think I've heard so many sportscasters over the past week and a half. Oh, let's look at a Wildcat. I even thought about that for a minute.
You know what?
You know,
no.
Spread it out, the old run and shoot, and leave it all alone. You don't revamp an offense right before you're about to go into conference play, or you could really derail yourself. I agree 100%. Keep it simple, stupid. What can we expect out of New Mexico, who hung with Wisconsin for a half, but this team has only beaten a school that I've only know of because we played them in basketball once, Incarnate Word, and they've beaten New Mexico State. Liberty beat them yesterday, 52-43, high-scoring affair, and that Wisconsin game ended up being lopsided, 45-14, but the first half was good. New Mexico is not a good football team, Caleb. There is no way this team should be able to come into Sam Boyd Stadium and win that game, right?
No, they shouldn't. But they're not one of those teams where it's a gimme on the schedule. I think like Prairie View or UTEP, they're not that type of a bad team. They put up points, and their offense, you wouldn't think so, because they run this kind of weird shotgun triple option variation where they're in the shotgun most of the time, but they have a lot of triple option mechanics to how they approach their offensive scheme.
To be fair, too, New Mexico was down 42-10 at the half.
Right.
So they outscored Liberty 33-10 in the second half.
They exploded, right? So it's like
they can make halftime adjustments.
Oh, there it is. But no, they can put up points, and they can put them up in a hurry in an unconventional way. It's not like they're lighting it up, throwing the ball, or anything like that. They actually have pretty bad passing stats, too. So there's going to be a lot of ground game. The game might go quick because the clock's not going to stop much with incomplete passes. But both teams are going to be running the ball, and New Mexico has shown that they can get it done on the ground and they can put up points. They do turn the ball over a lot, so we'll see if UNLV can capitalize on that. But I'm not saying it's a cakewalk. New Mexico has played in the past. They have played UNLV pretty tough. I don't think they do it here. I think UNLV starts off conference play with a win. That's my prediction. But it's not going to be a gimme. And it's going to be a good opportunity for Armani and the coaches to try to put some – I'm glad they had the bye week, because now they can try to work out some of the kinks in the passing game and maybe get that going a little bit, because they're going to need it going into conference play. But, no, I think they get the win here against New Mexico. Only day game of the season, so that might be a little weird for fans and for players, but I think they get the win. I think New Mexico isn't quite there to upset UNLV.
You see what I wrote on the paper, don't you?
UNLV 31, New Mexico 14.
There you go.
That's your prediction.
There's the score of the game. I don't think it's going to be
prediction
that tough.
With scores.
I think they are going to come out strong. I think that the bye week is going to help them tremendously, and I think we are going to see a better version of Armani Rodgers next Saturday afternoon. Moving to the NFL, Caleb Herring, Chris Magnum, Chapman, Jose Vellante chimed in and took the Arizona Cardinals with his pick. He is 2-0. Jose's kind of on fire. I believe he's 2-0. I got to check that and make sure he's not 1-1. But he is taking the Arizona Cardinals. I'm looking for the line on that game. Mags, I don't know. Okay, there it is. It is. They're playing the Seahawks at Arizona. They're giving up 3 points. I'm going to go second. I'm going to jump in front of everybody and give you my pick right off the get-go. 2 weeks in a row, the Patriots let me down in Detroit last week, but that was obviously one game I didn't mind taking an L on,
right?
Although I've got a whole other theory on that game and how Matt Patricia looked like Bill Belichick in that game, and I think it was scandalous. That's my opinion. I'm taking the Patriots, and I'm saying they are going to beat the Dolphins. Take the Patriots in October. Take the Dolphins in December. That's the way you bet on these games. Patriots at home, they will win. They will blow out the Dolphins. 6.5 points, not nearly enough. What you like, Caleb?
So I'm looking, and I'm liking, I don't know why, the Cowboys are favored over the Lions, but I'm taking the Lions on that.
Wow. Okay.
Cowboys,
+3.
Okay. They're +3. Cowboys, I don't think, have enough offensive firepower to keep pace with the Lions. I know they struggle, but the Lions can put up points at least, and especially because the Cowboys defense, who's perennially been a joke. So I don't know. I think the Lions put up a lot of points. I don't think the Cowboys have enough firepower to keep pace.
For those gamblers out there, he is undefeated last year and this year. And as we run down the clock, Mags, what you got, brother? You're 1-1 like me.
All right, I'm going to go with the Houston Texans today on the road at the Colts. I think the Colts are terrible. Andrew Luck, he can barely throw the ball. The defense of the Texans is still pretty good. Deshaun Watson, he's just starting to warm up a little bit. I like Houston getting, what are they getting?
It's a pick 'em.
Oh, it's now down to a pick.
It's a pick 'em.
I think they still win the game outright. I think they're better than the Colts, even if it's in Indy.
All right. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to bug Caleb every week so I get a pick from him. So we're not going to let him. He's got to lose sooner or later. Hey, listen, Major League Baseball, congratulations to all the teams. I think they're still buying.
Go Dodgers!
The Dodgers are in. I think the Brewers are right on the cusp today. They've got a big game.
You know, if the Dodgers, Rockies, Brewers, and Cubs all win, we get two extra games tomorrow because they have to play for the division.
Play for the division. Play-ins. That's going to be really, I love playing games. It's like watching overtime. We're out of time. It's Brian Feldman out of line. Okay, thanks to Caleb Herring, Chris Magnum, Chapman. Want to thank Billy Bean. Want to thank Ryan Reeves. Listen, the Vegas Golden Knights final preseason game tonight, Thursday, it all begins. And UNLV next Saturday. We'll be back next Sunday, 8 to 9 every week. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the reigning Western Conference champion, Vegas Golden Knights. We'll see you.